This video is brought to you by Blessed Be God Boutique, maker of Catholic fashionable apparel, handmade accessories, and more.
The American church has had a long sort of storied history with Rome, going back to the 19th century, really. But in our lifetime, before Francis, especially for those of you who were around during the time of John Paul II, there were whispers that the American church would go into schism with Rome. Why is that? Because when you had figures like Bishop Rembert Weakland running the church and Cardinal Bernardin and a few others who were pushing things very much in a sort of a James Martin kind of direction in the church, trying to sell us on this heretical idea of the seamless garment and a bunch of other things, the church was going faster than the Vatican wanted, at least in America. It's how you got communion in the hand, by disobeying Rome. It's how you got girl altar boys, by disobeying Rome. And that's how you got Latin to disappear practically from most masses in most places in the United States, by disobeying Rome. That happened. But then something happened. A lot of those cardinals passed away, or they retired, and they were replaced by more moderate types. And so now the churches in America has a different kind of relationship with Rome, but that's also one that's very similar. There are whispers of schism in the air. Sound familiar? It should, because for whatever reason, the church in America just can't quite get on the same page with Rome, and at least in this case, that seems to be a good thing. You will be hard-pressed to find a more strident critic of the American bishops than myself, but not going along with the things Francis wants to do is not a bad thing. But they've been put on notice, and they've been put on notice by two figures, it seems. Recently, Cardinal Pierre, the papal nuncio to the United States, actually told the Vatican, told the U.S. bishops, essentially to fall in line. And this was reiterated in a much softer, kinder way by the man that I call the voice for Francis among the American bishops, and that'd be Cardinal Blaise Supich of Chicago, who has hit mandatory retirement age, probably has submitted his resignation letter, but Francis has obviously decided to keep him around because he hit that retirement age 6 weeks ago, and if he was going to have him retire, he would have done it by now. Let's get to our story today, which begins with this headline from America Magazine. Cardinal Pierre warns against U.S. church not working with the universal church. He's telling them to fall in line. This is important context because going into the Synod on Synodality's second meeting session this October, while Fiducia Supplicans is being debated still, and there's now word of deaconesses coming, that is an important message that he is sending, that they need to go along with the universal church. The last time we saw a message like this, it was given to the German bishops, who were going faster than Rome wanted on the Fiducia Supplicans topic and on the deaconesses issue. As I reported to you last week, the German bishops have graduated a number of women from their seminary who are ready to become deaconesses. Some of them were actually made deaconesses in the spirit, whatever that means. They have essentially ignored Rome's warning to go along with the church. At least that one bishop did. And that bishop was rewarded in Germany with words of affirmation for what he had done by the head of the German Bishops' Conference. Go figure. And now we're getting that kind of sort of reprobation from Rome towards the U.S. church. Fall in line. Don't go it your own way. And this is weird because, whatever else you may want about the U.S. bishops, but the one thing they're not doing is trying to push the James Martin topic or deaconesses or any of these other hot-button topics in the church onto their dioceses. They're not doing it. And yet, here we are, Rome telling them to fall in line. It's very curious. So from the article, quote, "The Catholic Church in the United States is grappling with a tendency to become more auto-referential and withdraw itself from the international stage and universal church," Pope Francis's representative to the United States said. Speaking with Catholic News Service before formally taking possession of his titular church in Rome April 21st, Cardinal Christophe Pierre described the reality of the church in the United States as a paradox. He said that while the U.S. church has, quote, always been very faithful to the Holy Father, he also noted that the difficulty in America, like in every country in a world which is integrated but becomes more and more individualistic, is to receive the message of the Pope, especially to work together. The Pope feels that if we don't work together, we are not a church, he stressed. Cardinal Pierre pointed to a growing tendency to withdraw, to be more auto-referential, both in the United States and worldwide. We have to share our riches, our goods, particularly in an increasingly individualistic world, he told Catholic News Service. And I see that as a challenge for the church, end quote. The sharing your riches thing is kind of an interesting point there. The church in America isn't exactly broke. The two countries that give to the Vatican the most are the United States and Germany. Those are the two churches that give the most. It's weird that they're the ones being called to fall in line behind Rome, coming from very different perspectives. And I do think that the finances there are a key. We know, it's established fact at this point, that the donations of individual lay people at the parish level, your weekly tithe, has dropped dramatically in the last few years in the aftermath of Vigano's testimony about Ted McCarrick and about Francis's various other overreaches. That has had a massive effect on the pocketbook of the Vatican. We know this because they're broke, basically. That yes, they have a lot of material wealth, museums and art, fine art and other things that I suppose could be liquidated, and plenty of property they own. But the actual cash flow to the Vatican has slowed down quite a bit, even among the Papal Foundation, which is the sort of the version of Peter's Pence for the very, very rich. It was started by Cardinal McCarrick. McCarrick would go around and seek donations from wealthy Catholics in the United States to support the mission of the Holy Father. That was what it was supposed to be used for. And a lot of them have stopped giving too because the founder of it was Ted McCarrick. Why would you keep donating to that even though it's in the hands of somebody else now? And the same thing goes for the standard Peter's Pence. A lot of Americans are very upset with Francis, and so they don't give money to that cause anymore. Hence, they're supposed to fall in line. But this goes well beyond finances. This is also about those hot-button issues that are being debated. There hasn't exactly been the most warm welcome to fiducia supplicants in the United States. Sure, there are some high-profile priests of done blessings that skirt right up to that line of crossing that line of what that document says, and in some cases have crossed that line with no negative repercussions given to them for it, at least not publicly. But there also hasn't been exactly the warmest rollout for it either. And with deaconesses on the horizon, this is probably something that the Vatican is very concerned about, to the point where they have deployed Cardinal Supich to tell the bishops to fall in line. Now, this statement I covered briefly last week, a different part of it from Cardinal Supich, which was published by America Magazine. We're going to talk about something else here. This is him invoking the Eucharistic revival going on in the church in America, and how this love of the Eucharist also has to do with unity. Again, fall in line. It's weird for him to invoke the Eucharist here, but let me see if you understand what he's doing here. So from his statement, quote, Father Radcliffe began our retreat by noting that he was greatly encouraged by the response to Pope Francis's call for a synodal church. We are gathered here because we are not united in heart and mind, he noted, given the many existing and potential divisions in the church. However, the vast majority of people who have taken part in the synodal process have been surprised by joy. He continued, for many it is the first time that the church has invited them to speak of their faith and hope. What a wonderful way to put it. Father Radcliffe frankly acknowledged the reality of the situation, that we were gathered in a moment of promise, but also of trepidation, because we knew that we were not yet united. But he reassured us, and indeed the whole church, that those who embraced the synodal way have found themselves surprised by joy. Our retreat director cautioned us to be honest and admit that we arrived in Rome with competing hopes, divided and fearful about what lies ahead for a synodal church. Some were hoping for very significant reforms. Many doubted anything significant would change. Others fear that too much would change and that those changes would lead to schism. That same Eucharistic generosity should compel us never to discount the value of what others offer because we disagree or think it too little. When tempted to reject or marginalize others because they fall out of the norm, we should keep in mind that the Catholic theology has always been defined in terms of both and. Scripture and tradition, faith and works. And so as Catholics, when we listen to one another, instead of saying no, we should be open to saying yes and. Father Timothy offered another image to encourage us to respect marginalized voices during our synodal conversation. Renewing the church then is like making bread, he told us. One gathers edges of the dough into the center, and then spreads the center into the margins, filling it all with oxygen. One makes a loaf by overthrowing the distinction between the edges and the center, making God's loaf, whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere, finding us, Father Timothy offered. So too it is in listening to each other, folding margins to center and center to margins, that we become open to the breathing of the Holy Spirit and bringing about a renewed church. End quote. It's odd to link synodality to the Eucharist. Notice there wasn't a lot of call to conversion there for those voices on the outside. I would call it an odd omission, but that's what we've come to expect, especially in the last several years, is the distinct lack of calls to conversion for sinners, especially unrepentant public sinners. But hidden in that language was a little nugget that gave it all away, and that is the concept of renewing the church. Here's a very basic question for you. Why does the Catholic Church need renewal right now? Not saying it doesn't, but why does it need renewal? We were told decades ago that Vatican II was the moment of renewal in the church. What was the language we got after that? That we were living in a new springtime of the church, a new advent, which is borderline blasphemy because there was only one advent. There was only one Pentecost. They called it a new Pentecost in the church. Why were they using that language? When you start bringing in the language of ecclesiology, how the ecclesiology of the church changed, it becomes pretty apparent that even in their minds, it's a different religion than it was before. And perhaps that's why it needs renewal, because they foisted a false theology on the church and it has not worked. And so they think with synodality, if everybody just falls in line, we'll get it to work this time. Where have we heard that before? Curious what you think about this, so let me know in the comments, please. Hit like and subscribe if you haven't. It does help. So does sharing this on social media. That helps too. And as always, pray for the church. I'm Anthony Stein. Ave Maria.